This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We are tonight's entertainment.
Hello.
Why don't you want to talk to me?
Who is this?
You tell me your name, I'll tell you mine.
I don't think so.
I want to tell you my secret now. I see dead people.
You like scary movies?
Uh-huh.
A census taker once tried to test me. I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
Get away from her, you bitch.
Then why do you want to kill me?
I don't want to kill you.
Here's Johnny.
The show is mine.
They're back.
Indeed, we are back. This is the Casting Couch on Joy 94.9. My name is Thomas Caldwell.
And I'm Kylie Eddy. How can you go from that incredibly scary intro to now we've got beautiful, soft, gentle angels singing in the background?
It's all about contrast. It's juxtaposition. Producer Alan Tuxford is once again with us panelling. Welcome to the show, everybody. And thank you very much to Sonia for taking care of the women's zone for the past 2 hours and Murray for looking after the news. Now, we've got another packed show this week, Kylie. I don't know how we're just going to have to sort of all soap up to somehow squeeze all this into the 2 hours.
Okay, our film reviews can only be 50 words or less.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be very brief and fast. Now, we're just going to talk really quickly.
Oh, well, I do that anyway, so I am so sorted.
And yet, here we are padding. Maureen will be in very shortly to tell us all about the new Francois Ozon film, Ricky. Now, this is playing in the French Film Festival in other states, but it's getting its own season at the Australian Centre for the Moving Image, and Maureen went to see that, I think, last night, so she's going to tell us all about that very soon. Then we're going to review The Blind Side. This is the Sandra Bullock film. It's come from the States with a lot of anticipation. It's done incredibly well over there. It's been nominated for a stack of Academy Awards. She's already won a stack of other awards and is tipped to take home the gong at the Academy.
And not only that, Sandra has now become the highest grossing female star in the US. She's the first female actress to make over $200 million at the box office for a film based on her star power alone.
For this film, The Blind Side, is the one that's tipped her over.
Correct. No, this film has made over $200 million in the US, making Sandra Bullock the highest grossing female star ever.
Okay, I did not know that. That's
incredible.
It's
amazing, right? Well, wait till we get to the review.
Wait till we sink our teeth into that one. And talking about people getting nominated for Academy Awards, Jeff Bridges is very hotly tipped to take home the Best Actor for Crazy Heart. And I went to see that actually quite a few months ago now. I saw it in a very, very early screening. So I'll be telling you all about that right before the news. Then the second hour, we're going to be talking about A Single Man. Speaking of films that I think a lot of anticipation has followed, there was the special Joy screening last Sunday, and I hope you all, many of you, got to go along to see that. This is the one that's been directed by Tom Ford, fashion designer. It's his film debut.
And poor Colin Firth, he's also in the same category as Jeff Bridges for the Academy Award, and he has already stated in interviews that he thinks it's Jeff Bridges' year.
It's really not fair how that happens, actually.
Oh, there's so many good films this year.
I suspect Jeff Bridges will take home the award, but any other year it would have gone to Colin Firth. Anyway, we're going to do a bit of Academy Award stuff next week, so let's stop that. Of course, throughout today, we apparently will be doing a couple of live crosses to Sydney for Mardi Gras updates, and we're also going to be talking a bit about the Melbourne Queer Film Festival program launch that happened Wednesday night. Kylie, you were there.
I was there, and I would just like to state for the record, I was there for work.
You were working there.
I actually work for the Melbourne Queer Film Festival. I'm the sponsorship and marketing manager, so let that be disclosed.
The disclaimer is out there, yep.
So obviously I have a slightly biased opinion of the festival. Apart from being a lot of hard work, it's fantastic, of course, so we'll be talking a little little bit more about that later on.
Of course, that would be great. And we've got a bit of recorded material from the night as well to play for you. Please feel free to get in touch with us anytime during the show. We do love to hear from you. You can call us on 1300-JOY-949. Our SMS number is 0427-JOY-949. Or you can always email us on air at joy.org.au. We've also got some stuff to give away later in the show. We've got an in-season double pass for A Single Man. That's thanks to our friends at Icon Films. And we've also got a double pass to Alice in Wonderland in 3D. That's for a special advanced screening next Wednesday, March the 4th, 6:30 at the Classic Cinema in Elsenwick. That's courtesy of the Classic Cinema. You're just going to have to keep listening and we'll give you the details about how to win those later on in the show. We're not going to do it just yet. We want to whet your appetite a bit.
I hope you've held on to your 3D glasses from Avatar.
Yeah, exactly.
So you can go see Alice in Wonderland in 3D.
Hang on to your 3D glasses, full stop, folks. I think we're going to be seeing more and more films using 3D technology. Now, the music today is, you know, Carly, there's a scene in The Blues Brothers, one of my favourite films, where they walk into a bar and they ask, what kind of music do you play here? And the bartender says, we play both kinds of music, country and western. And that's what I'm doing today. Because we're reviewing it Crazy Hard, it's renewed my interest in country music.
Oh, that's great. I'm excited to see what you've got in the bag.
So don't worry, folks. It's going to be more of that kind of outlaw country thing. And, of course, lots of music from westerns.
You're already starting to talk like a country star now. You just called
Yeehaw.
Everyone folks.
Folks, so mosey on down with your buddies here. Enjoy 94.9. We're going to kick off with something fairly contemporary, a bit of alt country. This is a beautiful song by Nico Case called I Wish I Was the Moon. You're on Joy 94.9. You're on the casting couch. This is Joy 94.9. And that was My Morning Jacket with Ma Guitar. And it's actually spelt phonetically, so you have to pronounce it Ma Guitar. I'm not doing a funny voice or anything, people. Maureen is in the studio with us now. How are you, Maureen?
Well, thank you.
Now, part of my resolution for 2010 is not to see films that I really think I'm going to dislike. And when I found out that the new Francois Ozon film was playing at Acme, I remembered that I've seen four of his other films. They all pissed me off, so there's no way I was going to go and see this. But he is a director who's worth looking at and examining, who's very popular and has a lot of acclaim, so I thought it would be irresponsible to ignore him on this show. So I sent you along.
Get someone else to do your dirty work. I love it.
Well, I figured there's no point in me seeing it because I have massive issues with him, but I think it would be really good to hear what somebody else who doesn't have that baggage feels about his film. So we're talking about Ricky.
We are, which is a film from last year. Mm-hmm. And it's, as you said, directed by Francois Ozon, who also did Eight Women and Angel. So the only one I've seen is Eight Women.
And Swimming Pool was a really big one of his.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's actually based on a short story by Rose Tremaine, and that story was called Moth, which has probably got a bit of relevance to what happens. The movie begins with Katie being interviewed by an unseen person, but you assume she's the person she's speaking to is like a social worker. And because Katie's talking, you know, she's kind of distraught and she's talking about needing foster care. And then very quickly it switches to several months earlier, and Katie is a single mum. That's Katie's played by Alexandra Lamy, and she's got a young daughter, Lisa, who's played by Melusine Mayence, who's a very watchful, mature child. And the two of them are kind of like a team. Like, it's actually said at one point in the film, you know, we're a team. So it's kind of like quite an equal relationship. And so you see them doing what I assume is the same thing they do every day, where Katie drops Lisa off to school on the back of a scooter, and then she goes off to work in a factory where she's doing some kind of assembly line work. So this is all, like, you know, a very realistic kind of
sounds
setting.
Like social realism here.
Yes.
Classic social realism.
Yes.
Stuff. Yep.
Yeah. So she meets a Spanish man called Paco at work, and they very quickly get together, and Paco then moves in. Katie becomes pregnant and she gives birth to the baby boy that's Ricky.
Mm-hmm.
And when Ricky's a few months old, that's when you realise that he's a different child, because he actually begins to develop wings. So
okay.
This is where the magical element gets introduced.
Are wings on a human child magical? Really?
Well, he flies.
That seems like a fantastic thing to have.
Well, they're very realistic sort of wings, actually.
Sounds great. Because
the development of that is one of the really good things about the film.
Does the film style change when he grows the wings? I mean, does it...
Well, that's the only...
Does it stay sort of social realist?
Yeah, okay. It does. So
I imagine that looks very cool.
Yeah, because they start off... part of the plot line about the development of wings, which... And how they start off. So I probably won't give that away, but they start off sort of as little lumps, and then they look like chicken wings, and then they start to get feathers, and then they end up these, you know, sort of beautiful speckled feather wings. And Ozon said I wasn't trying to go and make them like a traditional, you know, angelic sort of wings, you know, I think he always big white feathered things.
Yeah. That's exactly what I'm thinking of right now.
Yeah.
So good.
So he said he's interested in fantasy presented in a believable way. So that's what he does with the wings. But and the kid who plays Ricky, he's very cute, and I read that he took his role very seriously. Like, he's only, you know, this baby little boy, but he loved the flying scenes, apparently. So and there's a very funny scene in the supermarket, which is where it's revealed to the rest of the world that, you know, this child can fly.
Does it ever get grotesque? Does it ever sort of go all a razor head and get weird? Or
no, it is that mix of this you know, kind of magical element in the middle of this bleak, not well, you know, like very humdrum kind of existence.
Kitchen sink drama type thing.
Yes. And so that's, I think it's quite enjoyable. But that's what I actually found it a bit hard then to kind of understand what really get a handle on the adult characters, at least the mother and father of Katie and Paco, because. One of the nice things about the film is how sort of accepting Katie is of these wings. Like, it's not sort of seen as completely bizarre.
Yeah.
But she wants to protect Ricky from the world. But at the same time, she's kind of, her treatment of the daughter Lisa is kind of uneven. So it just sort of seemed a bit of an odd mix of this, mother being involved with her magical child and not sort of taking a lot of notice of her other, which I'm not sure if that was intentional or not.
It's curious because I've heard a few other people say they weren't really sure what the point of this film was all about.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's that idea of this child brought, you know, sort of magic or elevated their existence. Mm. That's possibly one of the points. But, it's a little bit obscure.
Should I go and see it, Maureen? Look, will this be the film that changes my mind?
Well, I'd be surprised if you hated it.
Yeah, okay.
It's set as a qualified endorsement.
Well, that's a start. I really must give this guy a second. Well, I've given him four chances already. I must give him a fifth chance.
Yeah. What did you think of Eight Women? You didn't like that?
I turned it off halfway, actually. I found it. I find that he just takes the piss with cinema a little bit.
Right.
And it's all a bit of a laugh, and he just likes to be a bit smug and... aren't I deliberately making something that's a bit cheesy or flouts conventions of cinema?
Yeah, well, that's not it, this movie.
I find
movie,
it a bit
Ricky,
juvenile like that.
Right, yeah. Well, I don't. Ricky's not like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, changing
okay,
direction.
Okay, well, what are you going to get? Have you got a star rating for us?
Yeah, I'll give it three stars.
Three stars?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So that's worthy.
Yeah, okay, great.
All right, and that's currently playing at the Australian Centre for the Moving Image.
That's right.
It's a limited run, so
until the March. March the 10th.
March the 10th. Yep. So get along and see that sooner rather than later, folks. All right, we're going to keep playing country music and Western-inspired music. Here's the classic song from Midnight Cowboy, sung by Nielsen, Everybody's Talking. You're listening to The Casting Couch with Thomas and Kylie here on Joy 94.9. I felt like staying with Midnight Cowboy, so that was the main theme from the Midnight Cowboy film by John Barry. That's not the version that Faith No More often play, but Faith No More, who are in Melbourne recently, apparently quite like playing that piece of music occasionally.
It's beautiful.
It's a very sweet piece of music. I do adore that film. Now, The Blind Side, I'm going to say this is one of the most unlikely films to get so much Oscar attention ever. Regardless of how you feel about this film, it's not the kind of thing that I think anyone would have predicted to have got this much attention.
You know what? I'm going to completely disagree with you because I think in America, I think you have to put it through the lens of living in America. For me, watching this film was an experience of I kept having kind of weird experiences of going, oh, if I was an American, I would really like this. As an Australian, there were moments where I really struggled to relate, but I think it's so patriotic. Mm. It is so talking about race relations, and obviously with the first black president, this kind of film feels very worthy, and it's exploring kind of things. I just think also because, I mean, everyone's so, you know, the economy in America is so depressing, to have a film like this that makes Americans feel good about themselves, to me, it is, I just see why it's a slam dunk for them.
We're talking about The Blind Side. This is the new film starring Sandra Bullock, which is based on a true story about a woman and her family who take in a poor African-American kid who shows all this promise to be a great football player, and through their sort of care and support, he does become one of the all-time great American football players. It's, yes. Now, when you say you can understand why an American would like this film, I reckon we need to narrow it down and say Republican, Christian, gun-owning Americans would love this film.
Well, I think they have made it quite accessible, and I think there are certainly points in the film where, you know, it's to the point of quite patronising.
Oh, I think it's very patronising.
And manipulative, where it's saying, oh, look at, you know, kind of the subtext on the I mean, they even say it in the film, you know, how can, this is not white guilt, and don't judge me for this, and he's changing my life, I'm not changing his. But the subtext is, no, the whites are changing this black child's life, and aren't we fantastic?
Well, it perfectly articulates that trickle-down theory that conservatives tell you is alive and well in society, where it's fine to have really rich people because they will just naturally help out the poor folk. That's how it works. It's magnificent. And this film articulates that idea.
I think it's really interesting as well because it's not ever stated. It does say, you know, based on a true story, but the actual time, I don't think it's ever overtly stated this is the early 90s or this is the late, I felt like the late 80s, early 90s to me. And there's an,
it's hard to tell when you talk about Southern Republican Americans.
Well, it's true. It could be this
the way
year.
They dress could, I know, be any day.
But it does feel,
could be the 1950s.
It feels so ostentatiously wealthy.
Yeah.
And obviously comparing that to the poor black suburbs. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like there's a sense of consumerism It's obviously before the crash because they're, and I think that's also part of the reason why in the States it's done so well, because it is romanticising and reminiscing about a time not so long ago which really has forever been changed.
Hmm.
I mean,
it's very much gone with the wind almost for our times, isn't it?
It really is. Now, I mean, what I would like to say, though, is I am a huge Sandra Bullock fan. Mm-hmm. I absolutely love, love, love her. I mean, I can even watch her in Premonition and The Lake House. And even Miss Congeniality to Armed and Fabulous. That's how much I love Sandra Bullock.
Well, I'd like to put it out there as well that I think she is one of these performers who doesn't get the good roles that she deserves. I actually, this might come as a surprise to many people, but I think she's got the goods and she's just picked some really bad films. But if you look at some of her early work in the early 90s in films such as Wrestling Ernest Hemingway, really gorgeous film, and even Demolition Man, where she gets to really strut some great comic material, I think she's really good.
She has got, well, I once again would like to disagree a little bit. I think rom-coms do suit her because she does make it look effortless to do that kind of romantic slapstick poke fun at yourself. It's so hard to do and pull it off with such aplomb. I mean, that is the reason why she's one of the highest paid actresses and now the highest earning female box office star in the US.
I think she does very well. I just think she's been in some questionable films.
It's really interesting, actually, because she has her own production company and she actually produces a lot of her own films as well. Yeah. I mean, for me, this role for her really does feel like a watershed because for the first time, she actually disappears into a character. I think part of it is the accent, the blonde hair, the costuming. For most of the film, I actually forget that it's Sandra Bullock, and that is, I think, the first time that that has ever happened to me. I think it is an outstanding performance from her.
I agree with you, and it's by far the strongest element of this film. But otherwise, I found this a really loathsome film. Yeah. I found myself actively really hating it.
I really wanted to like it, but there were moments that were so cringeworthy where I'm like, this is really, you know, I'm not I'm obviously never lived in the States. I don't come from a poor black suburb, but there was quite often times when I'm like, I don't know how a black audience would connect with this film at all. It just felt very odd. And I guess one of my other big bugbears is it is kind of being marketed, even in Australia, which doesn't have a gridiron culture per se, as a sports biopic. And I actually, this is one of my favourite genres, even though I'm not remotely sporty, I love sports biopics because there is something humanly heroic about it. And yet, there's hardly any sport in this film.
It's not a sports film at all.
It's not a sports film at all. And that kind of disappointed me because I'm like, when's the sports going to start? Yeah.
You know what this is, and I'm not the first person to say this by a long shot, but it's precious for Republicans.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
I think that pretty much sums it up. Look, I don't really want to go too much further into this, but I really had major issues with the patronising and I think borderline racist tone of this film.
Absolutely.
I can only give it 1.5 stars. Ooh. And they're all for Bullock.
Wow. Well, I'm giving it slightly... I mean, look, every now and then I don't mind being overtly manipulated and I go with the flow. I do get a bit teary at parts. I'm going to give it a 3 because, once again, I just think the performance of Sandra is amazing.
Yeah, she is excellent in that. All right, keep listening, folks. We're going to be talking about Crazy Heart next. You're listening to The Casting Couch here on Joy 94.9. You're in the Carson Couch with Thomas and Kylie here on Joy 94.9, and that was Fallen and Flying, with, in both cases, the G's left off and there's an apostrophe there. You get that a lot in country music, I'm discovering today. That was from the soundtrack to Crazy Heart, and if you're wondering who was singing then...
I was wondering, Thomas, tell me, who was singing?
The first vocalist we heard was Jeff Bridges.
He sounds fantastic.
He can sing a tune. And the guy who then joined him on stage in that scene to sing alongside him was Colin Farrell.
Who knew?
Yeah.
He's amazing.
And in Crazy Heart, they both play country singers and they both perform all their own songs and they're terrific.
That must add to the authenticity.
It makes such a difference. I really loved Crazy Heart. This is a film centered around Jeff Bridges' character, a guy called Bad Blake. That's his stage name, and he doesn't tell people what his real name is. He's Bad Blake. And we were introduced to him. He's pretty much like a character from a country song himself. He's in his late 50s, and he's all washed up. He's alcoholic. He smokes too much. He's kind of gross.
Well, that sounds like Jeff Bridges.
Yeah, he's kind of... Really, I mean, this is a part Jeff Bridges was born to play. I mean, it's the culmination of the character he played in Fabulous Baker Boys, right through to Big Lebowski. Yeah. I mean, the guy rocks up in the first scene. You see him pulling up in his car, and it's obvious he doesn't stop for toilet breaks. He just has a large bottle with him that he empties on the side of the road, and to keep himself relaxed and comfortable, he just doesn't bother doing up his belt or his jeans.
That's kind of like us here in the studio.
Yes, like right now, we just all unbuckle as soon as the show comes on. And it's so much more comfortable, isn't it?
Oh yeah, thank God it's radio.
I am dreading having to put my pants back on. Which is ironic, because most people dread it when I undo it. Yeah. Anyway, so poor old Bad is all washed up, and he's resorted to doing gigs in places like bowling alleys. And meanwhile, one of his proteges is a guy called... It's the Colin Farrell character, a guy called Tommy Sweet, has gone on to big stadium rock gigs. He's like Keith Urban, you know, he's one of these full-on... loved, adored guys, and poor Bad has to accept the fact that someone who he brought up through the ranks has now really eclipsed him. So yeah, it looks like we're going to watch a film about someone who's very burnt out, and they are. But then gradually he does start to turn his life around, and a lot of this has got to do with meeting a character called Jean, who's played by the great and wonderful Maggie Gyllenhaal.
I just don't think she can put a step wrong. She is amazing. She's
just
such a great actress.
One of those people, and she's become... I love her so much that if I ever meet somebody who says I don't care for Maggie Gyllenhaal, I'd stand back and say, I can't know you. We're not going to be friends.
I'm taking you off my Facebook page.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm unfriending you.
How can you find fault with Maggie Gyllenhaal? I mean, what is wrong with you?
Yeah.
And she plays a younger woman who's divorced with a child, and they start a romance. And I know this sounds like an old man, younger woman thing, which I normally can't stand, but it works in this film because it's such a genuine... it's got such a genuine vibe to it. It was written and directed by a guy called Scott Cooper, who's a country music fan, and this is the first film he's made. He's an actor by trade, and he originally wanted to do a biopic of Merle Haggard, who is one of the old-school outlaw country and western singers. couldn't get the rights, so instead he bought the rights to this book, and he's made Bad a composite character, if you like, of guys like Merle Haggard, Kris Kristofferson, Waylon Jennings, and Towns Van Zandt. I'll say it again, Towns Van Zandt. So all these outlaw country singers are pretty much kind of meshed up and made into Bad Blake. Now, what I really adored about this film is it just evolves and develops in a really, really natural way. I think Hollywood has conditioned us, and I've got no huge fault with traditional Hollywood narratives, but we've come to believe that there should always be a certain cause and effect relationship, and there's always a crisis point and it should develop in a certain way. Crazy Heart defies all that. It feels really natural. Every time you think something dramatic is going to happen, it doesn't, because I think it's trying to articulate the way things kind of do go down in real life. There's not always necessarily a big climax. Things just sometimes sort out, or things sometimes go wrong. When Bad finally meets up with Tommy Sweet, played by Colin Farrell, they're not mortal enemies who hate each other. They're both men with a tremendous amount of respect and love for each other who are both sad that it hasn't worked out. Maggie Gyllenhaal's character is allowed to be emotional and vulnerable and even needy at times, but still a really strong, assertive character. And I just love that you had all this in one film. And then there's Robert Duvall, who plays Bad's old friend Wayne, who is just gorgeous. You just want to hug him. And there are just scenes in this film that send shivers down his spine. There's a bit where Bad and Wayne go fishing, and the conversation is just such the kind of conversation that old friends have, where they start off talking about fairly trivial things, and it slowly moves into a really meaningful, powerful relationship conversation where they're still being, you know, they're still being men. They're still being, oh yes, I'm still guarded, but somehow they have this meaningful conversation. You can tell I really...
You really loved it.
I really loved it. Not everybody has. I know a lot of people who just thought this was plotless, or they didn't like the character or couldn't get into it, but it just struck a home truth with me. And I'm not even a huge country fan, but this film has inspired me to seek out so much more country music, and, you know, heck, I'm playing a whole...
And now you're inflicting it on us.
I'm playing a whole 2 hours of country music on the show today.
I mean, this film has also won a lot of awards as well. We are coming into... Well, we're actually almost at the tail end of the award season, to be honest, because really the Oscars normally is the tail end. It's the last big awards. So it's done incredibly well, and from all reports, Jeff Bridges sounds like he is the odds-on favourite to win Best Actor at the Oscars.
Oh boy, I reckon he deserves it. I mean, he's been building up to this kind of role all his career. And like I said, like we said at the start, it's a pity that Colin Farrell is up against him, because I think Farrell's performance in A Single Man is also incredibly good.
Colin Firth?
Colin Firth.
Oh, there's so many Colins.
Colin Farrell in A Serious Man. I got both the actor and the film wrong there. That's really
good. Oh, you're
so
distracted by Jeff and how good he is.
And his beard. And his beard and his unbuckled pants. I love him. The final thing I was going to say, terrific music. And what I really liked about the film is the music starts off being kind of catchy gigs that you might expect an old-timer to be continuously playing throughout his career, you know, crowd-pleasing music. And the song we just heard was a bit like that. It's a fairly simple ditty that you can sing along to. But as the film progresses and the characters become more developed, the music also gets a bit edgier, a bit darker, and a lot more interesting. So before we go to the news, I'd like to play another song from the soundtrack, which I think reflects the tone of the film closer towards the end, where it's, you know, it's got a bit more meat on it and a bit more intrigue. This is another song sung by Jeff Bridges.
Before you go to that, are you going to give this a rating?
I haven't given it a rating. Thank you.
I can kind of guess what it's going to be.
What would I do without you?
Oh, thank goodness I'm here. I'm good for something.
I'll just babble and look at Jeff Bridges' beard without you. I'm going to give this 4 stars out of 5.
Fantastic. Sounds great. It makes me want to go and see it.
Yeah, I think you'd love it, Carly.
Great.
It's one we probably won't argue about.
Oh, God, that would be nice.
Which would make boring
nice
radio, so it's good this way. All right. Crazy Heart, 4 stars. I'm going to play another song by Jeff Bridges. It's a song called Brand New Angel. You're listening to Thomas and Carly on the Carson Couch, Joy 94.9. You're back on the Carson Couch with Thomas and Carly. Now it's time to discuss A Single Man, a film that, Kylie, I know you're incredibly excited about, so why don't you take it away?
Well, The Single Man is actually set in LA in 1962. It's a story of 52-year-old British, he's a British college professor, who is struggling to find meaning in his life after the death of his long-term partner. He is consoled by his best friend, Charlie, and sort of stalked by a young student, all in the process of one day.
It's an odd relationship, isn't it, with that student?
Absolutely. Mm. There are several odd relationships. I love this description that I found that says this is a romantic tale of love interrupted, the isolation that is an integral part of the human condition, and ultimately it shows the importance of seemingly small moments in life. And to me, that really sums up this film, because for me it felt like a poem more than a film. It's so incredibly artistically beautiful. And it's not just the visuals, which you would expect from Tom Ford, who is a fashion designer. It's his directorial debut, which blows my mind because it is so incredible for a first film.
Well, you know what I find really interesting is when people who have a very strong visual background, but not necessarily a filmic one, then come to make a film, there's a sort of disregard for the conventions and a rebelliousness and a boldness that you wouldn't get from someone who, say, went to film school. And you see that in this film. And you also, it reminded me of a film a couple of years ago called Hunger, which was made by a video artist. So again, someone with a very strong visual sense who is not necessarily a formal filmmaker. And as a result, you sort of get a film where every single frame is like a moving painting. It's sort of this incredible work of art. And I love that recklessness and that defying conventions, and it makes incredibly striking cinema. And I think you get a similar thing here with Tom Ford.
And look, the thing that surprised me is at the beginning, I really did feel like, oh, this is beautiful, this is so incredible. And I could feel myself just kind of relating on a visual level. Then slowly but surely, I actually did let go of that and became so immersed in this character and Colin Firth's performance that the storytelling and the actor's performance is so incredible in this film that it almost surpasses the visual element for me. It really captured my imagination but then drew me in, and I just found that it didn't let go to the final frame.
I had a similar experience to you. I found this film, its strength was in the middle. I, at first, had trouble, actually, with it because it was so stunning, and I felt it bordered on a little bit indulgent, only a little bit, in the sense that there was too much. It felt like someone was trying to do too much visually, and every single moment seemed to be amazing and slow motion, and he does some incredible things with colour, with subjective point of view as well.
Amazing.
I couldn't get into it at first. I thought it was too much and it was frustrating me. And even to the point where I wasn't too sure what was a flashback scene, what was his point of view, what was really happening. And that confusion, with some directors, I'm okay with it because I know it's done deliberately, but I didn't think it was deliberate here and it bugged me. Having settled that, once the film kind of got into its stride and settled down, I was absolutely gripped for the whole middle segment. And a lot of that has to do with Colin Firth. A lot of that has to do with Julianne Moore as Charlie, his best friend. Just put her in every single film and you'll just solve every single problem ever in cinema. Put her and Maggie Gyllenhaal together in a film and you've made the best film ever, really. I love Julianne Moore.
She is. And this is actually quite a different character for her. It is quite raw and it's quite... I mean, I think what is incredible about the actors in this film is that they have really trusted Tom Ford with this material to go to quite serious depths that do show an underbelly of... it's really a portrait of grief. And to be so vulnerable on screen like that is, I just feel like, a rare gift to be able to be a part of that.
Sure, except this is the third time in 2 years that Colin Firth has done this with. And when did you last see your father? He was mourning his father. Then in Genova, he was mourning his wife. If I was to be a real cynical bastard, I would say this is part three in the Colin Firth grief trilogy.
See, I feel quite relieved because I haven't seen either of those films.
Okay, look, so they're all very strong films.
So for me, I didn't have the baggage that came with that. So maybe that's a blessing in disguise. I mean, and look, the other thing is, I think he's aptly supported by the other male leads in this. Well, they're not really leads. They're all really supporting cast. I mean, it really is Colin's film. But Nicholas Holt, who plays a college student who really is feels an affinity with Colin's character, who's best known from probably more recently Skins, the TV series, the BBC TV series, who's a lead character in that. But probably most people will know him from About a Boy, the film with Hugh Grant. He actually was the boy.
He was the boy.
He was the boy in The Boy. And he has matured. I mean, he is incredible. And he's, I mean, Tom Ford clearly knows how to capture the male physique because he is stunning looking.
And last minute too.
Yes, exactly. That it felt, and actually, Colin was alas. Well, Colin, in interviews that I've heard with Tom, Colin, he was always his first choice, but through scheduling conflicts, was not going to be able to make the film. And then last minute came up, and 3 weeks prior to shooting, he was able to get him. And I think it is one of those serendipitous things because it clearly feels like a role he was meant to play. Matthew Good is also excellent, who was in Match Point, and actually has a bit of a kind of gay following, I guess, from Brideshead Revisited, the remake. He was also in a lesbian film called Imagine You and Me. He kind of missed out there. The girls got all the fun. So, these supporting characters really helped to flesh out what is really one man's journey from, I don't know, grief to absolution.
Look, it is a strong film. I don't think I've got such mixed feelings about it.
Well, why are your feelings mixed?
Well, partly because I was so unsettled at first. I thought it was overly indulgent. And I'm going to do something I don't normally do and just read, because this is the latest edition of Sight and Sound, an English magazine. This reviewer says, and he's talking about the overuse of style, and he says, George can't use a loo or a vending machine without some exquisitely arty framing shot and telling 1962 period detail. It's like Mad Men meets Antonioni.
See, I've got to say, for me, I went with it. It's from the very first frame.
I did in the end.
From the very first frame, I just trusted that I was going to go with this film on whatever journey it took me. So that and those initial feelings didn't bother me. I just let it kind of wash over me. And I just found found this film incredibly life-affirming. Mm. And it's actually one of those rare films that for me really connects me with why I personally want to be a filmmaker. It really is a transformative film. And we haven't even got to the subject matter of what an incredible representation of a gay man in cinema. And I mean, I think it's incredible that this is really being promoted as a mainstream film, and it is so gay. I mean, it's based on a classic book that I know a lot of my gay male friends,
Christopher Isherwood,
it's a seminal piece of work, and. You know, I think it's, I mean, I hope lots and lots of people go and see this, because I think it does show how important same-sex relationships are, and even today are not acknowledged. And there is so much, it's set in the 60s, but there's still so much relevance today, and that really that was so powerful for me.
Well, I suspect a lot of people are going to feel the same way as you did. And like I said, I think it's got a very strong middle section. We really can't touch the ending because we can't give it away, but we do have different opinions on that. You think it's perfect.
And I think it's interesting that you think that this film...
And I have issues with the ending. And actually, our conversation off air made me rethink my position. So I'm willing to keep having that conversation with you, but we're going to have to turn the microphones off for people who haven't seen the film yet.
I think that it's interesting that you think that this is a different structure to film, where this feels like an incredibly narratively structured film for me. It reminds me of
narratively
other films.
It is, but it visually is. I think it's very...
Visually,
I think being very bold and breaking a lot of rules.
Yes, in the visuals,
and it doesn't always work for me, but it mostly does. Look, it's still a really strong film. I don't want people to think I'm being Mr. Grumpy Pants on this. I'm still going to give it a very high 3.5 stars out of 5 and say to people, you should see this on the big screen. It deserves
definitely see it
that.
On the big screen. Well, I personally feel like this is going to be one of my favourite films of the year. I can already feel it, so I'm giving it 4.5 stars out of 5. It really affected me.
Sensational. That's A Single Man, which is playing everywhere right now. I'm still playing country music, but this next song I think is quite appropriate to play after our review of A Single Man. It's from the soundtrack of Brokeback Mountain. It's Willie Nelson singing He Was a Friend of Mine. You are indeed back on the Carson Couch with Thomas and Kylie. Now, we've got some stuff to give away. No doubt after hearing that review of A Single Man, you're just thinking to yourself, how on earth do I get to go and see this? And you should be, because as we were just discussing off air, it is a magnificent film to see on the big screen.
Absolutely.
And I've just decided I'm going to go and give it a second chance to try and bump another star up there on my 3.5.
I love it. We've got a
you're very persuasive, Kylie.
Oh, I know. You know what? Anyone would think I was in sales. Funny that.
Well, hang on, I am too. I'm hang on, that's right. I really suck at my job. I hope none of my employees, past, present or future, are listening.
So we've got a season double pass to A Single Man, courtesy of Icon Films, to give away.
That's right. We're also going to give away a double pass to see Alice in Wonderland in 3D this coming Wednesday, March 4th at 6:30 p.m. at Classic Cinema Elsenwick. So we're going to give away both of them at once. You need to be a Joy member. Of course.
Of course.
You can't have won anything from Joy in the past 2 weeks. And when you call in, just let us know what you would prefer. A season double pass to A Single Man, which you can use any time you like while the film is still showing, or the double pass to the advanced screening of Alice in Wonderland on Wednesday. So if you're going to go for Alice in Wonderland, make sure you're free this Wednesday at 6:30 and you can get to the Classic Cinema.
Yes.
Okay? That's important. All right, you can call us on 1300-JOY-949. You can SMS us on 0427-JOY-949. You can email onair@joy.org.au. I can see the phone's going nuts already. We've only got Warren out there answering it by himself. So if you don't get through right away, don't panic. We'll hold the competition open for another 10 or 20 minutes. We'll go until about 6:45. So you've got over 15 minutes there.
And then we're going to draw the lucky winners.
Yeah, indeed. All right. In the meantime, let's do some more music. I'm doing country music today. I haven't played any Johnny Cash yet. Let's correct that wrong. I should have played this on my anti-Valentine's Day special. This is Johnny Cash with his wife, June Carter Cash, singing It Ain't Me, Babe. You're listening to The Cast and Couch. You're on Joy 94.9 with Thomas and Kylie, and that was Johnny Cash singing live the Folsom Prison Blues. And I believe that is from when he actually went to Folsom Prison to perform in front of the prisoners. Just love the rhythm section on that song.
It's amazing.
Oh, Johnny Cash, the original badass. I love him. Hey, there's something called MQFF that's round the corner that I believe you've had a thing or two to do with.
I can't believe it's finally here. It's like the festival finishes and then we have, you know, a month or two to just kind of recover from it. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly you're working on it again. So for those people who may not have been listening at the start of the show, I am the sponsorship and marketing manager for the Melbourne Queer Film Festival. So I want to let my bias be out and proud now.
Bias is declared. Look, I think it's a good thing. I think our show is all the stronger for the fact that we've got an insider.
Well, I mean, here's the ironic thing, is because I work on the sponsorship side of things, I actually do not see a single film.
Well, yeah.
Because my job is a handful enough. Mm. So Lisa Daniel, our incredibly esteemed festival director, and her selection committee spend 8 months of the year. They meet every week and go through all the over 400 submissions they had this year to select the best 150 films to screen in the festival. So
we do love Lisa Daniels here.
Oh,
you may have seen the throne in the corner of the studio and wondered why it's just always empty. That's reserved for Lisa whenever she wants to come in.
That's why we kind of have a similar, you know, we bow and curtsy before her when we go into work every day. So, yeah. You know, that definitely happens. So she, you know, she does an amazing job. And I think what's fantastic for me is that I actually get to go to the festival and see all the films with the punters. So it's quite an incredible experience for me to be able to experience the festival with film goers and film lovers and, you know, really enjoy it in that way and appreciate all of Lisa's hard work. Now, she will be on the show in a couple of weeks' time talking more specifically about what's, you know, she's seen the films. She knows what's happening.
Well, you hope the programmer has seen the films. Yeah.
You know, I can assure you, she's seen everything.
Yeah, and I guess a lot of stuff that doesn't make it in as well.
A lot of stuff.
Yeah, that's the downside to programming and curating films, actually. People always think, oh, well, it's a bit like being a reviewer. They think, you just get to watch films all day and you remind them.
How fun is that?
They're not always good.
And you're not always going to like them. So, yeah.
But it's such a strong program. I was flicking through it before the show and I couldn't make the opening on Wednesday.
So, now we're let me just correct you because people will freak out.
Not the opening, the launch, the program launch.
So we have a program launch that our MQFF members are invited along as well as it's like a media launch. And we have sponsors. Obviously, Lisa presents the program and, you know, it's for the first time it's available. We also had...
So your members get that little sort of advantage.
Yeah, it's part of being an MQF member.
It's part of the, yeah.
That they get invited along. And
they more than deserve getting.
Absolutely. Mm. They support us all year round. And they also get their program guide first so they can fill out their priority booking form. I will say that ticket sales over the last couple of days have been incredibly strong. So if you are interested in going along to the festival, please find a program guide at one of they're available in a city. They're available at Acme, which is our main screening venue. Or if you, you know, online, just go to mqff.com.au and there is an instantly downloadable full version of the program guide online.
Sensational. So getting access to all this information is going to be really easy.
It's super easy.
Let's pause for a moment. We'll come back and we'll talk a bit more about some of the films that are in the festival, and we'll also talk a bit more about the program launch on Wednesday. You're with Thomas and Kylie. We're talking Melbourne Queer Film Festival. This is The Casting Couch on Joy 94.9. Knocking on Heaven's Door by Bob Dylan there, from the soundtrack to Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid, Sam Peckinpah's 1973 Western that Bob Dylan also starred in. Well, featured in, he wasn't a star. You're on the Casting Couch with Thomas and Kylie here on Joy 94.9. Hey, we're giving away tickets to A Single Man in season passes. That's gone gangbusters. Lots of people in line to do that. We're going to have to do a draw probably in about 10 minutes to work out who is going to get that double pass. But no takers so far for Alice in Wonderland. So let's just do that again. We've got a double pass to seeing Alice in Wonderland in 3D this Wednesday, March the 4th, 6:30 at Classic Cinema in Elsternwick. Our producer Alan's going to be there. You can hang with him.
Is that part of the deal? Do you get maybe, you know, like...
That's an add-on.
As a value add, you get a large popcorn and Alan.
And Alan.
Perfect.
None of you know what he looks like.
Well,
so
he kind of looks like a lesbian. He's got lesbian glasses and short hair. And
my goodness.
He's tall. He's very tall, though. He's taller than the average lesbian. I will give you that.
All I'm saying is those two tickets are still up for grabs. So
my mic might get turned off unexpectedly.
No more callers for A Single Man. We've got heaps of people for that. But if you want to see Alice in Wonderland this Wednesday at 6:30, give us a bell. SMS 0427JOY949. Phone us 1300JOY949. Alan is just losing the plot
now. He's very offended. I don't know why. It's okay.
Email onair@joy.org.au. Now, Kylie, I think we should stop talking a little bit. Let's play some of the stuff that was recorded at
the program launch.
So I keep going to say opening. It's not the opening. No. It's the program launch of the Melbourne Queer Film Festival.
Yeah, so Tim Lennox, who's the news director here at Joy, was actually on hand to... he spoke with... I think he was there, and obviously Robert Doyle, the Lord Mayor of Melbourne, was there to officially open the program.
Yep.
And Lisa Daniel also spoke about what was in the program.
All right, let's take a listen.
The Australian Centre for the Moving Image, otherwise known to most of us as ACME, is the hub for the 20th Melbourne Queer Film Festival, being run from the 17th to 28th of March 2010.
We have been at the City of Melbourne supporting the Queer Film Festival since 1998, and that is a remarkably proud history of support for an organisation that really does it because of the passion and commitment of a range of organisations and people. And that's, I think, what makes this such a special festival. And I wanted to put that point to you tonight about why we'll be delighted to go on supporting the Queer Film Festival. Because what began as the Queer Film Festival, and remains so, despite its sort of global reach, is also the idea that it has become a true festival of Melbourne. It's become one of the major events of our arts and our culture mainstream. After that other film festival, you're the second biggest film festival in Melbourne. And when you think about the differences between the two, that is a remarkable achievement. And I'm quite proud, as I looked at the program and read my briefing note, of the range of people that you will reach and touch, the 25,000 people who will be part of this remarkable 150 different films, 96 screenings over 12 days. It's an incredible enterprise, and that's why the City of Melbourne is so delighted to be associated now, and I assure you, in the future.
I'd like to thank our three selection panels. They sit through an enormous amount of rubbish, really, to bring you the best possible program. The things you see on the screen are the absolute gems. They do sit through an enormous amount of pretty bad stuff to get that. We received over 400 submissions, and we select 140 of those titles, so that'll give you some idea I know I speak for the whole queer film team when I say how proud we are of the festival.
So that was the program launch, Melbourne Queer Film Festival. Tim Lennox was there, and you heard the Lord Mayor of Melbourne, Robert Doyle, speaking.
Who I gather was quite a hit.
You know what? He was incredibly witty and just very genuine about his support. Now, you know, we work very hard with the City of Melbourne. They're incredible. They're our principal sponsors, and they do so much for the festival, along with our presenting partner, Volkswagen. And Volkswagen also spoke on the night, and they were also, you know, got a great response from the crowd. So for all intents and purposes, it was a very exciting night. We had a red carpet and we had photographers and we had all sorts of fun things happening. So I think it bodes well for the program itself.
Fantastic. I'm getting tingly. I love these big festivals. I do really.
Well, I think
I love the vibe, I love the crowd.
As it was mentioned there, the Melbourne Queer Film Festival is the second largest film festival in Victoria.
Yeah, I have no idea. That's amazing.
It's amazing, isn't it? We are so lucky to have this.
After MIFF. What you need is a way to say Melbourne Queer Film Festival like that, you know, like MIFF.
I know.
Can you say
MQFF?
McWoof?
No.
McWoof?
MQFF is it. There's no easy way of saying it, unfortunately. Yeah.
I worked for the Melbourne Writers Festival last year and I kept on trying to find a way of saying that and I came up with McWoof. But that just sounds like a dog barking underwater.
Oh, yes, it sounds a little bit odd. We want to avoid that.
Yeah, MQFF. I like
MQ, it. MQFF. So the program is available now online at mqff.com.au. Of course, Joy 94.9 are our major media partner along with Evolution Publishing, and Joy does so much. And in fact, Joy have got a special members screening that's happening at the festival. So it actually is the Big Gay Musical.
Mm-hmm.
And it's screening on Friday, the 26th of March at 6:15 p.m. And if you have your Joy membership card, you can get the MQFF membership price for this film, specifically for this film. It's $13. So that's a great deal, great night out, and it's going to be a great fun film.
Yeah, well, that's what you want. We, of course, are going to be covering it an enormous amount on this program. Not next week. We're going to be talking about French Film Festival next week, but the 3 weeks after that, we will have MQFF content. So just keep listening. You will anyway, of course.
Yes, it's all happening. It's a very exciting time of the year for us.
We're all over it. All right. The final song in my little country and western tribute here on the Carson Couch tonight will be The Wanderer. This comes from a Wim Wenders film, a German film called Far Away So Close, and it features you two with, once again, Johnny Cash. You're on Joy 94.9. That's you too with guest vocalist Johnny Cash singing The Wanderer. And that's the end of my country and western musical tribute here on the Carson Couch.
Some people might be rejoicing about that, but once again, I've had my musical horizon broadened.
Well, 5 years ago, I never would have thought I'd be playing country music willingly, but, you know.
Here you are.
You know, I've been educated and I certainly enjoyed it anyway.
Oh, good for you.
Definitely a change of pace to what is to come for the rest of the evening, because very, very shortly, Joy will be broadcasting live from the Sydney Mardi Gras.
How exciting.
So you're going to want to keep listening for that, folks. I meant to read this out earlier, but someone called Brian from the Central Coast of New South Wales made a point of saying, what a refreshing sight to find. I think he's referring to the joy.org.au online. At last, a credible gay radio station. Living in the backwoods of New South Wales, it is a find indeed. Thanks. And he's looking forward to our coverage of the gay and lesbian Mardi Gras tonight. So thank you, Brian, and thank you everybody who took the time to listen in and call up. We have a winner for a single man double pass. This is a double pass thanks to Icon Films. Stephen from South Yarra is the lucky recipient.
You're going to have
that.
A great time.
Thank you to Murray for taking care of the news throughout the show today, and a big thank you to Maureen as well for popping in to tell us all about Ricky when I refused to go and see it. Maureen will be back next week to talk to us about some of the French Film Festival films, so it's always great having Maureen in the studio. Thank you to Nick, who looks after the podcast. That should be up by Tuesday. Alan for panelling and producing. Thank you as always. Big thank you to Warren, who's been looking after the front desk for us and taking all the phone calls. That was a really, really popular giveaway.
Well, and rightly so. So I hope everyone enjoys it.
Kylie, it's been a pleasure as always.
Thanks, Thomas.
I'll see you next week.
Will do.
You've been listening to the Casting Couch on Joy 94.9, but like we said, keep on listening, because the live broadcast courtesy of Joy from the Sydney Mardi Gras is not far away at all. Good night. We'll see you next week.
The Casting Couch, Joy 94.9's premiere movie show.
You can find more Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.